Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Roll out the Monday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything that you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those talks go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, but you should swing on by there just to see what's going on. You never know what might pop up. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link itself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that when you're over there, well, hey, we'd really appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Well, you can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three C's.
So. Oh, all right. Well, I guess I got confused because for some reason I didn't think you were going to do Players of the Week because it was short. But since you sent me something, you made your picks. I guess we can go over them.
Yeah, I thought about what you said and trying to do 2 weeks. It just would have been more complicated than it sounds. So I figured, what the hell with the short week? Might as well go for it. And I hope my emails made it easier for you. But
I don't know. I didn't open it.
No.
We always start with the AL hitter of the week, as we call it.
How you supposed to post it if you didn't open it?
Oh, I just open it later and post it. And I don't open it because you yelled at me the one day. So I wait till you reveal it now before I mess with it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, copy and paste is going to make it out easy for you, but the hitter of the week for the AL, this one was a little rough. I'm sure you've taken a look at the stats for the week, but I went down to one of your favorite teams, down to Houston. There wasn't a problem down there for George Springer. He appeared in 3 games and 10 at-bats, crossed the plate 3 times with 4 hits. One of them was a double. One was a home run, and he drove in 6 runs while walking 4 times, but only striking out twice. He posted a .400 batting average. Slugging was .800. One of the things that stood out for me, obviously, was the low strikeouts, which I think was pretty easy to do for everybody, seeming as it was only 3 games that they were in. But with the 4 walks, I mean, for a guy coming up in today's era of baseball, I think that's pretty huge because most guys in his era, or however you want to say it, would probably have the opposite with the 2 walks and 4 strikeouts, or even scratch the walks and have 6 strikeouts. So it's showing that, they can break some of that norm of the, swing for the fences, because that's the only way to get runs these days, right?
Yes, that's the only way you get anything today is for home runs. So,
yeah. Just don't cheat. Moving over to the National League, it was obvious that you can only look at pretty much 2 teams who I was going to pick from. And, I looked at Rizzo. He had some decent numbers. But, of course, he didn't have any home runs.
He's a leadoff guy now. He's not going to have that kind of power anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But when you go to the other side, playing third base for St. Louis, I mean, he just had a monster day. Geez, what was that, Friday, when Cardinals won? Like, it was football score. In 5 games, he played 17 times, crossed the plate himself 8 with 9 hits, 2 doubles. But the big kicker was the 6 home runs with 10 RBIs, 3 walks, and 2 strikes. Posted a 529 batting average. Plugging was the highest last week for the short week. So, I mean, bar none, I don't think anyone can argue. And I don't know if the national guys put up their weekly picks or not, but Big Jack, do you think across the board he had to be the player of the week everywhere?
Who?
Matt Carpenter. Oh, I forgot to say that.
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, he could have been the player of the week if he had just played on, what, Thursday? Is that Thursday he hit some home runs, or was that Friday? No, it was Thursday.
Yeah.
No, it was Friday. Whatever day it was. He could have been the player of the week just from that game. So, yeah, that was, that made it a lot easier for the National League. You know, I know some guys put up some better batting averages than he did, but he had 6 home runs with the 12 RBIs or something. So, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and we'll have to get into this 5-game series as soon as we're done wrapping this up. We've got some questions for you. But this week's pitcher of the week, this one was a little rough. I had 3 guys in line, but, you know, what it came down to is I went with the guy who had the lowest whip and pitched the most innings, and that was Dylan Covey of the White Sox. So, you know, and this one hurt me even more because your guy, my guy, Felix Hernandez, was Saturday, but he went 8 in the third inning, gave up only 2 hits. He walked 2 but struck out 5. He was in there. I mean, the runner-up for Wade LeBlanc from Seattle, who had a pretty solid outing, but, you know, at 7 and third innings, give up 4 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 10. I didn't realize Wade LeBlanc was a strikeout guy. I should go look into see that.
Not normally, facing the White Sox.
Oh, okay, there you go. And then, of course, I figured I'd hear it from you if I picked another Houston Astro or let alone Justin Verlander for pitcher of the week, who did strike out 11 batters in 6 innings.
You did pick an Astro. It was just George Springer.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, you remember for like a month or two, I was picking only Astro pitchers.
Yeah.
That was their fault for being so awesome. Jumping over to the National League, hands down, when you look at the numbers, I don't think anyone was better with 13 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 home run that gave up the only earned run off of 2 hits in 8 innings, and that was Zach Greinke. Pretty solid outing for him. So, and that wraps up my players of the week.
Yeah, let's see. It looks like, I know the National League player that they picked wasn't Carpenter. In the American League, it looks like the national guys went with Rougned Odor of the Rangers. So,
is it because he had 8 hits?
You know, they don't really give the reasons. They post their stats just kind of the way they do it, but they don't really go into any explanation like you do. It's just, you know, here's who we're picking, here's what he did for the week, and that's it. But they don't have pitchers listed. I'm wondering if they do. I don't know if they do weekly pitchers or how they do that. So,
you know, I mean, normally I wouldn't argue, but, you know, Odor had 3 more at-bats than Springer, but that's only because Springer walked 4 times. So if he would have got a single at 4 at-bats, he would have 14 at-bats. He crossed the plate 1 more time than he did. Yeah, he had 4 less hits, but with those 3 stolen bases Rougned Odor he grabbed, it's not like he added anything to it because he only crossed the plate twice, along with his 3 RBIs. So he only crossed the plate once, aside from his home run. So, and he struck out 4 times compared to Springer's 2. And he had 3 RBIs compared to Springer's 6. So, you know, and to be honest, Aaron Judge's batting average, on base percentage, slugging, and OPS were all better than Odor. So, did he show up to Arlington or whatever the Rangers Stadium is and the horse this weekend?
Yeah, maybe. I was a little surprised that, you know, with the week Judge had. I know he didn't have huge power numbers or anything, but anytime you see him hitting as well as he did like that, I'm really surprised, being the fact that he was in New York, that they just didn't run and hand it to him or, you know, try to give him some other awards as well.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, with the day and age of sabermetrics, I'm surprised they haven't discounted hitting. Well, they have, because batting average doesn't matter. But if that's the case, then Rodner Odor basically got the award because he had 8 hits last week and 3 stolen bases.
Yeah, you know, like I said, they don't do any explanations at all. It's just kind of like, here's our pick, here's the stats for the week, and there you go. So
pretty underrated pick, but you know, like I said, this weekend I wanted to get your take on it. The Cubs and Cardinals had a 5-game series, and this is something I've talked about. We've talked about several times when it comes to adjusting the baseball schedule. You know, what did you think of it? I mean, yeah, it's hot rivalry, and obviously one of the oldest ones in the game. And they went Thursday, Friday with a, you know, an untraditional. What do we call it? The doubleheader. I don't know what it's called.
Day night doubleheader.
Yeah, the day night doubleheader, and then they wrapped it all up on Sunday. You know, yes, coming off the All-Star break, technically most of the Cubs, except for Javi, may have gotten, you know, a break. So they were all fresh. The Cardinals were fresh. Dexter Fowler's getting more playing time now that Mussini's out of the picture. I still felt like it was a really competitive series, and I'm not advocating for 5-game series all year round every weekend, but I thought it was a, you know, a pretty successful outing for both teams this weekend. Well, as far as the game goes, you know, scratch off winners and wins and losses. What did you think of that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was, you know, I didn't think it was a bad series. You know, I didn't think it was great. I don't know if either, you know, if either team played fantastic. I'm surprised there wasn't a little more crying because they had to play Thursday. They didn't get the off day for the extra off day for the All-Star break. So I'm surprised there wasn't some more crying about that, but that's kind of what I expected. You know, there's still, you know, I think it brings up more questions, you know, especially for the Cubs who are contending, than it does for the Cardinals. Because, you know, I mean, John Lester goes out and just lays an egg. And, you know, I know the Cardinals are totally a contender, but I don't know if I would call them that this year. So, you know, now you got to wonder if maybe as he starts to pitch against better teams, is he going to have issues? You know, I mean, I realize more and more that I do not want Joe Maddon handling my pitching staff. I couldn't get far enough away from this guy when it comes to dealing with pitchers. I'm trying to think, what else did I learn about the Cubs? Oh, I did learn that Jesse Chavez is now the greatest relief pitcher to ever wear a Cub uniform, because he got 6 strikeouts, which is apparently something that no other Cub reliever can do. So I'm assuming that there's a possibility he'll get some Cy Young work from Chicago Media when that comes around. You know, Cardinal-wise, they still look like they're in a little bit of disarray. You know, I mean, Dexter Fowler, while he's playing better, it's just the point that he was so bad. I mean, he hit .222 in the series. I had to pull up his stats to look. And that was an improvement over what he did before the All-Star break. You know, they went out and got Marcell Ozuna. I thought it was a fantastic pickup. And, I mean, it just hasn't worked out for whatever reason. You know, so you look at it. I mean, I know you hated the Fowler contract when they gave it to him, and it's looking more and more like it's going to be an albatross because he's still signed there for, what, 3 more years? You know, and then if Ozuna was the pickup, it's just kind of like, man, these are – you know, these are two guys they were going to build the outfield around. So, you know, what the hell do you do? You know? But, yeah, you know, and then, you know, pitching-wise, I mean, I'm just convinced that every team in the major league has bullpen issues. You know, it just seems like nobody can go to the bullpen and find a setup guy who can get consistent outs. Well, except for Jesse Chavez. Take that back. I don't know. I mean, did we learn anything about the Cubs, or did you learn anything? I mean, except the fact that Anthony Rizzo was their best leadoff hitter.
No, I mean, I didn't even realize that. Did he lead off the entire weekend?
Yes, he led off. He led off every game. So he played all five and led off every one. I think they went Rizzo 1 and Bryant 2 for every game.
How did the series go? How many did the Cubs take out of that series? I didn't even look at that.
The what?
The series breakdown.
Rizzo hit, you know, so it worked out. I know Joe Maddon gave Mason for why he had Rizzo at the top of the order, and I don't remember what the hell it was. I tend not to listen to him on Fox.
Yeah, then Fowler signed through 2021, 14.5 mil for them every year with a $2 million signing bonus each year. What did you think of
horrible.
The overall take the teams out of it, the five-game series?
The next stop, Finley Park. I'm one of those guys, you know, stuff like that doesn't bother me. I think they should play baseball. I mean, like, I have no problem with a doubleheader. You know, it is a little odd that the Cubs not only played the five-game series, but then they turn around and they go right into a series with the Diamondbacks. Yeah, I mean, they don't even get a day off, which was a little weird for me. So it's, you know, that's going to be a big test for them, I think, you know, especially with as bad as their pitching staff has been. So we'll have to see how they kind of hold up. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing – I really think they should have had – four-game series all weekend from all the teams. You know, I know the Cubs had the makeup game, but, you know, there's no reason everybody shouldn't have played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and, you know, work it out that way. But, you know, nowadays where, you know, transportation is better and you can get to places faster than ever, they need more days off, you know, unlike in the older days where it was much more difficult to get back to your team after an all-star game or something like that, and they still played every – you know, the day after, you know, it wasn't like they had all these days off. So, you know, but I guess that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I like the concept. I think it, you know, gets both teams in one spot for an extended period of time, especially in the summer, you know, where the ones with families can bring them in and they can have a nice little five-day thing. And I know the players obviously have to work the entire time, but, you know, I think it's a good concept for baseball. And if they were to do five-game series, you know, if you had started on Thursday and, you know, a doubleheader on Saturday or Sunday and then give them Monday off for a travel day, I mean, I think it's a great concept. And then that would, you know, if you do it right a couple times, three times out of the summer, maybe four times, you've just knocked, four games off the schedule. So, but, you know, we're just two guys on the phone.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I get it, you know, the players union, I mean, their job is to help the players out. I mean, that's the object behind it. But, yeah, it gets kind of stupid when you listen to them about how they – you know, they need their rest and they need their days off. And, like, you know, the team's got really lucky. I mean, it's July in Chicago. It could have been 100-plus degrees for every game. And, you know, like it was in Texas, the Rangers and the A's, which I think is still going on tonight, or was it, I forget, maybe it was the Rangers and the Blue Jays over the weekend, but, yeah, you know, I mean, you could have had weather like that. You know, I know the humidity was high, but the temperature itself wasn't terrible. So, you know, I kind of get tired of listening to millionaires cry about, well, you know, I had to play 4 days in a row. Okay, well, I had to work five. So, you know, and I didn't make anywhere close to what you were making, you know. So, you know, there was a couple weeks ago where, you know, Mr. Fantasy had to work like 12 straight days because he had to work 7 days and then right into the next week. You know, I know he's making a lot more money than I am, but he's not making millions of dollars a year. So, you know, it's kind of like they're, you know, I get a little frustrated with that disconnect between a guy who's playing a game for a living and can't understand what it's like to be the person coming to see him play the game for a living. So, you know, if you have a problem playing 4 days in a row, quit and get a real job.
Well, what did that mean? Do you think that's what makes all of the major four so different than NASCAR? You don't really hear them complain about things like this.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, and I've, you know, you often wonder about that because obviously it's not the most popular sport. I mean, for the longest time, it was literally just a Southern sport. You know, only the Southern part of the United States really had interest in NASCAR, you know, and slowly but surely it kind of broke out. And then, you know, I know the popularity has been waning a little bit these last few seasons. But yeah, they seem a little different, don't they? When it comes to their interviews, you don't hear too much complaining about, you know, the fact that they race, you know, however many weeks in a row and they get very few breaks. What is it now? I think it's 34 races or something like that over the course of 45 weeks. So, but yeah, they don't do a lot of, you know, too much complaining. And I know, you know, everybody's going to say, well, you know, they only do it once a week. Well, you only play football once a week, but yet those guys still find a way to complain. So, you know, and at this point in the NBA, do they really play more than once a week? What, each team plays, what, two games a week? But yet they still find a way to complain and talk about how overworked they are. No, but yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that would, you would think it would make NASCAR a little more endearing to like the working fan, you know, because they seem to be a little more relatable. And I don't hear too many hockey guys complain either. Granted, no. You don't see too many hockey interviews just because the sport isn't that popular. But even like when I've seen those guys play, they don't complain too much about having to play. You know, like their playoffs, they literally go every other day. I know occasionally they get the 2-day break, but, you know, in a lot of the series, it's every other day. You know, if you did that in the NBA, LeBron would be on the mic after two games like that crying. So, you know, and I don't think he's getting checked by, you know, 6 feet tall, 230-pound defenseman, you know, skating. So, you know, I mean, I know the NBA has its physicality to it, but it's nowhere as close to as physical as the NHL. I don't care what any of those idiots are going to try to sell you on. So, but Dan, I do have sad news that I have to relate here, Dan. I was very disappointed when I heard this. I don't know if you saw this one, but Tim Tebow has broken his hand, and it appears that he is going to be out for the remainder of the season. You know, he was a Double-A All-Star. I think he's in Double-A. But, looks like, the guy they cried about couldn't hit, he managed to hit 273 this year in 84 games. Six home runs, 36 RBIs. Still a lot of strikeouts, but that's today's game, 103. That's kind of how it was. But, he made hugely marked improvement between this year and last year. He only hit 226 combined last year. So he made almost a 50-point jump. I was a little disappointed, Dan. I think you and I may be two of the few guys actually rooting for him. I think everybody else wants to see him fail. I was a little disappointed to hear that looks like he's going to be done for the season.
Didn't he have some hand issues in the beginning of the season?
He might have. I can never remember. There's so many injuries now, I can't keep them straight. But, it is possible. So we'll have to I don't know. What do you think? Does he start next game in AA, or do you think they promote him? Did he do enough to get promoted again?
I think it definitely depends on spring training camp, but I think if anything, he spends maybe a couple of weeks, at most a month, in Double A next year, and then you see him wherever they have their Triple A team for the remainder of the season. If not, I think people thought I heard some people thinking that he was on his way to the Mets this season.
Yeah, I know there was some talk about him possibly getting the September call-up, which I think would have been cool for a team like the Mets. They're struggling. You give him a chance to get out there. Plus it never, never hurts your attendance in the time of year because people are going to come out to see him. He's going to turn 31 here, the middle of the month. So a setback like this could really kind of impede his progress a little bit. I mean, I know athletes are playing longer than, they used to, but, it's still tough when you're going to get a 31-year-old guy next year at Triple-A. You got to start to kind of question, how long will he play, what kind of future does he have?
He's in pretty damn good shape for his age, and if anything, I think he can make it to 40.
he doesn't have any serious injuries playing football, so.
No, and for the Mets, I think this is a big, seeing what the direction that they might be going, this is obviously we don't know until the trade deadline, and after all the waiver stuff clears. For next season, this could be a real kicker. If they unload DeGrom and Syndergaard, and the reports were saying that even though Jonas is back, that he may not even play next season. So, having him come up next season would have been, would have just helped generate a little bit more interest in the Mets. But then again, if you wait till the second half of the season and let him kind of continue to do the work down in the minors so that he can get ready to, really challenge and face guys like Max Scherzer. And one of the things I like about him is I tuned in last night to catch, whatever Sunday night game was on, but it was rained out, so they were showing the home run derby again. But they were doing some interviews, and they had an interview with Tim Tebow. And, the question that was asked him was, what's bigger? What's more stressful or bigger for you? They threw the football play for 3rd and 12 or whatever on the goal line or something, or a 3-2, with 2 outs and, this could be the walk-off. And, they threw the, well, what if it's Max Scherzer? He goes, well, who's the pitcher? And they go, Max Scherzer, and he just laughed. He doesn't take himself ultra seriously. So if he does make it to the Mets within the next year or the next 2 years, I think he'd be a great guy for them. you know, in their locker room, and even when it comes to the interviews. Putting a positive light on the team.
Yeah, while we are on the mess, you brought up Jacob deGrom, and now I heard tonight, you know, this is the night I know I set up with my lineup. DeGrom is supposed to be the guy to have on FanDuel. You know, he's pitching against the Padres, who have the worst batting average in baseball against right-handed pitchers and the most strikeouts. So this really sets up for where, it should be a night for DeGrom to put a huge daily fantasy point. Of course, that means since I have him in my lineup, he's going to give up 10 runs over five innings. But, you know, that's just kind of how things go for me. But, yeah, that's what the big talk was today. He was supposed to be the guy. If you're building a fantasy lineup tonight, you may want to try to center it around DeGrom. I also heard, Dan, apparently when the Cubs reached out to the Mets, the Mets said that they could work a deal with DeGrom, but it would take a combination of Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez, and Addison Russell. It would have to be two out of the three, plus some of the minor leaguers, to get the deal done. So while the Mets are willing to trade DeGrom, you're going to have to pay the price to get him.
Yeah.
So... Oh, and I think Ian Hop was also the fourth guy. It had to be two of those four guys. Because I know I got an email from Sean Merckx after that, and he was just freaking about how it would be stupid for the Cubs to make that deal. Even though in reality, the Cubs would be one of the few teams that could make that deal. Because by moving two of those guys, they could just replace them with the other two guys they didn't trade. So, you know, they have a difficult time finding at-bats for the guys they have. But, yeah, it doesn't look like it'll be something they would do, because that would be a big, big price tag. But, yeah, that's just a little bit of a little smidge of what the Mets are asking for DeGrom. So if your team is looking for him, now you understand the price they're going to have to pay. So, and I'm guessing we can probably write Syndergaard off the trade market. Oh, we lost Dan. But, yeah, we could probably write Syndergaard off the trade market because he has – what did – mouth, foot, and hand disease is what I believe I saw. There we go. We get Dan rolling back in here. So, I was saying, Dan, I'm guessing Noah Syndergaard is probably – off the trade market now because he has hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Who does?
And ended up on the... So...
Who has it?
Noah Syndergaard.
Huh. I thought that was only a thing for babies.
Yeah, well, you contract it from children. And apparently, over the All-Star break, he was volunteering at a kid's camp. So they think he picked it up there. But yeah, this'll keep him out till past the trade deadline. And I just don't be able to get Noah Syndergaard through waivers. A lot of guys will make it through waivers. I don't think Syndergaard would be one of them because. You know, he's still, what is he still in arbitration? I think he's reached arbitration, but, you know, you would still have him for a few years. There's no way he goes unclaimed through the waiver process. So, yeah, it looks like he'll be, maybe this offseason he'll be moved. So, yeah, and then I heard. Another one of these idiots, Dan, and, you know, I think it was Chris Rose again, and when it comes to stuff like this, you know, he's a really good announcer, but he really needs to just kind of shut up with his baseball opinion, because he got on this bandwagon with Manny Machado where he thinks the Dodgers should now go out and offer him whatever he wants or whatever he needs to keep him. And then, as he put it, they can just move Corey Seager around the infield. Boy, it's really easy to spend other people's money, isn't it, Dan?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was just like, please shut up. You know, Machado wasn't brought into the Dodgers to be signed long-term. You know, he's not going to accept any kind of deal now anyways. He wants to go out on the free agent market. I don't understand, Dan. These guys are closer to the game than we are. How do they not see this? Where do they come up with this stupidity? So, you know, I think the only way that Machado is actually signing a contract is if, you know, the Dodgers offer him 10 years and $500 million. He would probably take that deal because, you know, let's face it, he'd be stupid not to, right? So, you know, it's just kind of like, really, I mean, you know, pay attention. It's like they don't pay attention to the situation around them. And, you know, they just kind of randomly spout stuff off because, you know, they heard it someplace else or they think this is their genius idea. And, you know, it's just kind of like, really, where the hell did you come up with that? So, but I realized, you know, I mentioned Jacob DeGrom and I didn't bother to even roll through my FanDuel lineup for tonight. So let me pull this up really quick. I believe they already went live, but it is a late swap league, so you could always go in and make some changes here. Oh, no, it's still not live. All right, we got a few minutes then. I spent the money on DeGrom. It was $11,500, but like I said, everything is pointing to this being just, you know, should be a monster outing. Now, obviously, I spent that kind of money. I did spend big in the infield again. I don't know what's going on with me there, but not as much as yesterday if you listen to the podcast. I went with Matt Olson in the catcher first base slot from the A's. He's hitting fifth for $3,100. Brian Dozier, the Twins at second base, he's hitting cleanup for them tonight at $3,800. I plugged Ronnie Rodriguez of the Tigers in at third base. He's hitting second, only cost me $2,000. He's another one of those guys that I keep hearing, you know, he's supposed to be huge value here. So I'm buying it tonight. I didn't go that route yesterday, but I'm buying it tonight, so we'll see how it goes. Francisco Lindor at shortstop, I'm going that route again. He's leading off for the Indians, cost me $4,800. My outfield starts with Nicholas Castellanos of the Tigers. He's hitting third for them tonight, cost me $3,100. Then I got Chad Pinder of the A's as my next outfielder, $2,500. He's hitting second for them tonight. Then I wrap up with a couple more value guys. I got Dwight Smith Jr. of the Blue Jays. He's hitting eighth for them tonight. Cost me $2,200. And then my utility guy is Ryan Rua of the Rangers. I was originally going with Luis Valbuena, but he wasn't in the Angels starting lineup. So I plugged in Ryan Rua. He's hitting sixth for them tonight. Cost me $2,000. So, again, I got DeGrom as my pitcher. Matt Olson is my catcher first base guy. Brian Dozier at second. Ronnie Rodriguez at third. Francisco Lindor at short. My outfield is Nicholas Castellanos, Chad Pinder, and Dwight Smith Jr. And then my utility guy is Ryan Rua. That should be starting any minute for that to get going. But like I said, it is a late swap league like they are now. And then I know you're always curious how I did in Home Run Derby because, you know, I just suck at this. I'm still on the outfield kick. Of course, it's Harper Trout. And then I added J.D. Martinez as my third outfielder tonight. Interestingly enough, they're all hitting third in their order. So that's where that worked out. You know, yesterday, you know, again, like I said, if you were listening, I was big on Chris Archer. I thought he was going to be a little undervalued guy for his price tag. And, I was right on him. He ended up putting up 52 points for me. So that was a big, big plus there. You know, the problem was I just didn't hit enough. I ended up my value guy yesterday was Yario Muniz of the Cardinals, and he did put up 15.5 points. But you know that was you know really like Ian Happ was my you know my big guy, and then I kind of screwed myself. I had Wilmer Flores because I wanted to make sure I had a late guy, And like Dan said, the game got rained out, so I couldn't even go in and swap a guy. I just had to eat the zero. So that definitely screwed me up a little there, but, you know, that's sadly kind of how things go from time to time when it comes to doing these things. But, you know, hopefully tonight we'll roll out a better game, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, there are some interesting, you know, matchups depending on where you're going and how you're looking. You know, like I said, it was, you know, DeGrom was the guy that, you know, every fantasy guy is talking about, and he just kind of jumped out. So hopefully that worked out. You know, the key to that, of course, is finding the guys who are going to hit around him, because I think a lot of people are going to take DeGrom. You know, I know the other guy, I was a little surprised there were a lot of guys hot for Ross Stripling tonight. I was a little worried because he's got a matchup against the Phillies, who can really hit the ball. But he was, you know, he was a pretty popular pick as well. But, yeah, there are it's always interesting when, you know, like Corey Kluber is making a start tonight. You know, you get guys like that. I know Severino was making a start. So there are some big time interesting guys out there if you want to go that route. But yeah, like I said, statistically wise, it's all pointing to DeGrom. So hopefully I land it right and it works out. But who knows? With my luck, probably not. So you know, Dan, I don't know. Did you see this big trade?
Well, first I got to go back to your question about the media, and, you know, Chris Rose mentioned whatever, and just moving Seager around the diamond like he's Javi Baez or something. I think that's pretty much the kind of, you were saying that he was insane. Well, that I'm getting from the implications from what he said, but it's just, I think when it comes to guys like he and the majority of them, I think, like you said, they're around the game, but I don't think they're as invested in the game as we would like them to be. And I think that's what it comes down to, is, you know, they're quick to just jump on the popular opinion or just kind of go with whatever the way things are going. And that is, Joe Manning's philosophy of baseball is popularized right now. Even though it works once, but it kind of, you know, his philosophy didn't really work, because when he got to the playoffs and the World Series, he went straight traditional. So, you know, take it for how you want to take it. But I think that's part of it, is that while they're around the game or they're employed by the game, they're really not that invested as much as they should be, I think.
Yeah, well, I've learned from watching the MLB Network that the other guy who's a complete idiot is like Greg Amsinger. He throws out his dumb. And it's kind of like, really, how they just need to stop you from, you know, tell me the score and who did what while the highlights are going on, and then shut up and let the former players talk. Because you literally, no clue. Absolutely no clue on what goes on with stuff. You know, just a complete idiot. So, you know, just one of those things. But yeah, I was asking you, did you see this big trade?
Oh, you mean the one we got right? When we said that Manny Machado was going to go to the Dodgers?
No, this was actually a football trade. I was wondering if you saw this one.
No, not yet.
Oh, well, here it was the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They picked up defensive end Jamal Westerman, wide receiver Chris Williams, and two first-round picks from the Montreal Alouettes in exchange for two offensive linemen, Tony Washington and Landon Rice, and Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Football. Actually, you know, I mean,
yeah.
If you would have said CFL, I would have known all about that, seeing as the what was it, the regular quarterback or the starting quarterback, the regular quarterback, got hurt, and then the backup was off limits or was unavailable to play?
Yeah, I don't know that they hadn't, Hamilton hadn't been playing Manziel. He'd been sitting behind Jeremiah Mazzoli, who I think has been playing in Canada for quite some time now. They had the extra guy. So he goes to Montreal where he'll play for Mike Sherman, who was a coach at Texas A&M. I think a year. It might have been a year. So that should help him out. But yeah, I thought that was
interesting.
No, actually, his former Packers coach, Mike Sherman.
Oh, that's right. I knew that sounded familiar.
So, yeah, I think you were thinking of Mike Martz. So, but we'll see if, or maybe it was Mike Pressman. So we'll see if Johnny gets some playing time. I'll have to look for those IOF games now and see if I can get some playing, because obviously he didn't play with the Tiger Cats. So I just thought that was humorous. I don't know why, because it's Johnny Manziel, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see him in the States in 2 years. That's interesting. Oh wait, never mind.
So now, what did you learn anything over this weekend watching baseball? Did anything stand out to you?
Did I learn anything?
Yeah.
Well, good teams are always going to have bad days, and great pitchers aren't always going to have great games. I picked up a little bit of the Cubs, but it was kind of nice. I don't watch a whole lot of White Sox, especially when they're home, because Hawk is like a scratching nails on a chalkboard. But it is fun to listen to, Steve Stone and the other guy. I forget his name. It's maybe not so much fun, but just a nice break of pace. But being able to catch up with some Seattle games, it's a good outing, but it sucks when you tune in a little late thinking that you're still going to catch your pitcher and Felix Hernandez, and he's gone, and it's only the fourth or fifth inning. So, that was a little disappointing. And I learned that Ohtani can score from first.
So now what I'm interested, like, you and I didn't get a chance to talk about this whole Josh Hader thing. He had some, they went back like 9 years or something to find some incredibly stupid tweets that a 17-year-old put out. And yes, they were incredibly stupid and he should have never did it, but it was 9 years ago when he wasn't a mature adult. When the Brewers brought him into the game over the weekend, their fans gave him a standing ovation. His teammates seem to be behind him. Nobody has really came out against him. But, and I guess I shouldn't say humorously, but to no surprise, now the Brewer fans are getting ripped for supporting him.
I mean, like you said, it was 9 years ago. He was an immature kid. And the fact that the Brewers had to go to the length of sending him to some kind of sensitivity training. I forgot what the words were. I think it's a little just over the top. The sad part is, and this is just the way the country is, so get mad at me if you want, but if he weren't white, it wouldn't have been this big of a deal.
Yeah, again, we kind of end up to the point where now, instead of it being the NFL this time, you're asking Major League Baseball to be the judge and jury on something where they had no effect on him whatsoever. He was a 17-year-old kid. And, again, granted, you know, you're wrong for saying that kind of thing because I don't think he truly believed it. I just think he was a stupid kid who thought he was trying to be funny or something. But, yeah, you're asking the Brewers or baseball to punish this guy or however it works out. That's not their place.
No, I mean, and it's, to me, it's just ludicrous that, there was no crime committed, number one. And to be honest, every single idiot with social media account has made some kind of stupid thing like this. So if you're going to go after him, I feel like you should go after every single person who makes any kind of even innuendo towards a racial comment, then everyone should go back, go to sensitivity training and, you know, join Starbucks and their racial, I don't know what the hell the class was called, but, you know, that was something actually going to the class that I was taking. They're like, so, you know, everyone praised Starbucks for taking all their employees and shutting down for a day and sending them to like a 2-3 hour class. But how does that really change the person's views?
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even really believe these are Josh Pater's opinions. I just think he was 17 and stupid,
mm-hmm.
You know, but who the hell digs through 9 years of tweets?
Somebody that has nothing better to do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't believe I've ever posted, you know, anything, you know, like that could be construed as, you know, racial or homophobic or whatever you want to look at. But, yeah, just the thought of somebody being able to go, you know, 9 years back to what you posted, look at this. They implied that, you know, this person was this or – you know, like you said, I mean, it doesn't, you know, like he flat out said some stupid stuff, but, you know, anybody could just kind of refer to something, and, you know, you're that guy. You're like, wait.
Yeah, I didn't see the tweets. Did you? Or?
I only saw one of them, about homosexuality or something like that. I didn't really look into them because not to say I didn't care, but, you know, again, you're talking about a 17-year-old kid, and I work with 18-year-old kids, and I know what comes out of their mouth. So I'm not guessing a 17-year-old is going to be too much different.
Yeah. Well, you know, and even it goes back as far as when Jeff Samardzija was coming up in Major League Baseball, and we started this podcast, and you know, I remember you and I talked about this before, and when we started learning about Twitter, and I was following Jeff Samardzija, and, you know, he's a pretty funny dude, to be honest. But shortly after, his stuff, he just disappeared off of Twitter. I don't know if he, you know, got rid of all his social media or what his realm of that game is. But I'll never forget one of the jokes he put out, you know, was when Instagram started. And he goes, Instagram? That's what they used to call my old college roommate. You know, all you needed was the drum roll. And, you know, everyone would have been cracking up. But was that today? How much trouble would he be in? You know, how much scrutinization would he get, you know, if he was in a completely, you know, conservative area, which I don't know what baseball town would be that way, but you know, it's kind of ridiculous that they're going back that far and, you know, attacking a man who was a child then.
Yeah.
You know, but I do like
yeah.
the fact that some of his teammates were backing him.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to tell you, I think if I was a professional athlete today, I probably wouldn't even have social media.
And it's
you
interesting
know,
you go that
cool.
way. You know, it's interesting that you say that because you know, the savior for the Bears.
Yeah.
Mitchell Trubisky, and I believe, you know, he's made a buddy and a good friend with Kyle Long, and I think that's something you have to do when it's NFL. If you're the quarterback, you really need to be on good terms with your linemen. But I guess they both vowed to disengage, as he said, and zero dark 30. I forget the acronym, what he said. But it's becoming like a big thing here in Chicago. He's not fantasy. He's off social media, and he's, you know, not going to watch the media, be it positive or negative. He's going to focus on the game, which I think is really smart, especially for a second-year kid.
I mean, when you think about it, for an athlete, I mean, is it really worth it with all the headaches some of these guys have been going through? You know, I mean, I know they say, you know, no publicity is bad publicity, you know, or bad publicity is still publicity, I think is the quote.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, you got to start to wonder when is it just too much? You know, I mean, you look at some of the stuff a guy like, you know, Odell Beckham went through, or, you know, Antonio Brown, you know, just some of these guys, you know, now finding this on haters' account. I mean, you got to wonder how many other accounts are they digging back through?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and, you know, what it comes down to, too, is, you know, I don't even know if it's so much digging through, but going back and maybe ordering the transcripts, because I believe you can actually apply to get that or order it. Their entire tweet history. And, you know, if you get that in PDF form and you're looking for certain keywords, you can just keyword that in and it'll find it for you in a PDF.
So you have to wonder, yeah, how many guys are they just doing that to, going, okay, well, let's check this or let's check this, or, you know, scrolling through Instagram pictures or, you know, whatever, you know, the heck is still out there, you know. But, yeah, I just don't understand how it could be worth it for a guy. You know, because, I mean, you're talking about guys make millions of dollars a year. That's a lot to risk for some stupid little social media post.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and, you know, I think it's going to come to the point where I work workers' comp, and when we get a new client, the letter that goes out to them after they sign the paperwork, or I think when they do sign, when they even sign up to begin with, is to limit your social media. You know, they're pretty much advising their clients to not use it at all, because it could completely damage their case with something stupid as going to the grocery store. And I think with the way, you know, sports is treated today, you know, even, you know, I know you're not a big fan of it, but the baseball leagues where these kids are playing all year round and they're part of a group, I'm pretty sure that these groups are going to have to, you know, maybe not so much as employ a social media guy, but they're going to have to understand and teach their kids, you know, the players and their parents that you need to watch it, you know. Look at this guy. And
yeah.
I think Hader's going to be a big example for a lot of the young kids coming up, or even have dreams of playing in the major leagues.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, one of those things, because, I mean, again, you know, you're talking about kids. I mean, obviously there's kids younger than 17 on there, and, you know, they don't necessarily have a filter, or in some cases don't know that this could be construed as being incorrect, and, you know, all of a sudden we're going to hear, hey, well, you know, back in, you know, 10 years ago, this guy tweeted this out. You want to listen to the podcast, all you got to do is go over to TuneIn.com, and you can hear it live.